They're actually 52 hand-painted canvases.
Oh my God.
And when we had our book opening, our launch, it was in an art gallery and all the paintings were everywhere. And the first person who showed up was a woman, probably in her 50s. And she was just walking around crying. And she was saying how she was abused as a child. And that this book kind of spoke to her inner child.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Valberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with Robin Flanagan of the Kinetic Pen. Robin, how are you? I'm really happy to have you here today.
I'm happy to be here and thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. It's sunny out and that's always good.
Yes, I'm loving the summer. We were talking beforehand. I think you've got travel plans. You've got outdoor plans. I'm the same way. This is my favorite time of year. But for this moment, we're inside, we're on a Zoom, and I'm tremendously interested, curious about this conversation, where this conversation will go, because just to read the bio a little bit here, you are a freelance writer and essayist. You wrote a nationally recognized book, M is for Mindful. You wrote a book on Rochester High Performance for 175 years. Countless other publications, taught classes, and as someone who's interested in mindfulness and someone who's interested in blogging and writing, I think this conversation could go so many of ways. So I'm excited to have it, excited to have you here. Is there anything in that basic bio that we missed, anything new and exciting that maybe isn't on your website?
Well, would now be a good time to talk about the teachers pay teachers thing we were talking about, or do you want to get into that later?
Let's talk about that now, because we only talked about it for a moment a second ago.
Teachers pay teachers, and it's
Got it. Website.
Yep, it's a website that teachers go to buy resources for their classrooms. And I have a children's book called M is for Mindful, and this is it right here.
Yes.
And so we've developed a creativity journal and a coloring book and digital posters for teachers to have if they want to use the book in their classrooms. And the book is an ABC book, and every letter, it's an alphabet book. So every letter has a word that goes with it, and then a four-line poem that has to do with the letter. So for example, A is for attitude. And then there is a poem that says, accept what comes your way with grace, lessons come from every place. And so the whole book is like that. We've been very fortunate to get some pretty well-known influencers endorsing the book, which has been really nice, like Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi, and Sharon Salzberg, who was one of three people to bring meditation to the West in the 70s, yeah. Temple Grandin, Andy McDowell, the actress. So just a lot of people. It's been wonderful.
I love it. This is a book that I literally wrote it down before we started talking that I need to purchase this book because, okay, so I'm a grown man. I am not too old for a book like this because I have to remind myself every single day to be mindful, and having like a quick, easy read that you can share with the kids and help yourself. That's incredible that such, you know, prestigious people have endorsed this book. Were you like freelance hired to write it? Was it a passion project that just came out of the blue? Tell us a little bit about the birth and creation of M is for Mindful.
Yeah. So my daughter is now 15, but when she was around three, I started just coming up with these poems for her because I was learning about mindfulness as an adult and I didn't want her to wait until she was an adult to learn it. So I would come up with a few and then it started looking like something that might be something I'd want to share with the public. And so I started saying, okay, let's do an alphabet book. And that happened as she got older. And so she would actually help me with some of the words and she would react to whether things worked or didn't work.
Okay.
And I wrote it mostly on long car trips and walking the dog. And there were many versions and I finally came up with a manuscript for it. And I sent it out only to a few agents and nobody bit. So it's that stereotypical, I put it in a drawer, literally probably 8-9 years, something like that.
Wow.
And it is a pretty long and involved story of how it came to be, but I wasn't hired to do it. I did it myself and there's an illustrator and a marketing manager and we all got together and we decided to kind of try to put it out into classrooms as well. I wanted to talk real quick about, you had mentioned being an adult and reading it. And I wanted to tell you that when, so these pictures, I just want to show you maybe one of them, but all of these pictures, I'll do the A page since that's the one I talked about, but they're actually 52 hand-painted canvases.
Oh my God.
And when we had our book opening, our launch, it was in an art gallery and all the paintings were everywhere. And the first person who showed up was a woman, probably in her 50s. And she was just walking around crying. And she was saying how she was abused as a child and that this book kind of spoke to her inner child. And so we were kind of a mess at first. So it just was, it really opened our eyes. And someone else bought it for a high school graduation. So we were thinking, wouldn't it be nice to be kind of like, what's the Dr. Seuss book that where the sidewalk? No. Oh, the places you'll go.
Okay.
Buy for college graduations. We were thinking, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? What we didn't expect is most people or a lot of people are buying them for baby showers. We didn't expect that. Okay. Very interesting.
No, I have goosebumps thinking about that lady walking in and the tangibility of seeing the portraits on the walls. Mm. And I'd love to get this book in my lap. So I'm going to, I recommend everyone else. How do I purchase them is for Mindful?
Amazon is the best way. And we also have a website that will, you can also go through Barnes and Noble online or Target online. Most people go through Amazon, but yeah.
Cool.
One of those. And our website, that's what I was going to say, is www.mindfulkidsthrive.com.
Mindfulkidsthrive.com. I love it. That's a great domain name too, as well. So that's a winner.
Thank you.
you had mentioned years and years passed, and it was basically just sitting in the corner, wasn't picked up, no one bid on it right away. Did we touch on what was that moment where it caught momentum and you realized, oh my gosh, not a minute was a waste of time? Was there an endorsement or a moment that really brought it to light? Because I mean, nowadays, some of the leaders in the field are endorsing this book. What were those little moments that led up to where you are today?
Well, I did go to a conference, a Writers and Books conference, the Ladder Literary Conference downtown years ago. And there was an agent there. And you know how you have little pitch sessions? So I pitched it to her and she was really excited about it. And I was able to stay in touch with her and she wanted to pick it up. And we had a contract with her for a year that ended up not working out for a variety of reasons. But we decided based on the interest that we were hearing from pretty big publishing houses that we should go ahead and just do it. So we put it out ourselves. And so we realized that that might actually be a better thing because no matter what we want to do, if we're, there's a, for example, there's a teacher in North Carolina who is every month taking one letter and coming up with an entire sort of a curriculum with arts and crafts and a teaching lesson around it. And then it's going to 10 schools in North Carolina and a school in Connecticut. And so we're able to just partner with whoever's interested. There's another teacher who's building a science guide about the brain and tying it to the book. So because we're in charge of it and we self-published, I think because of that, we're able to just do whatever we want to do, which ended up working out in the end.
Yeah. Congratulations. It clearly did work out in the end. And obviously, an easy way to support me and Robin is to like this show, share it, subscribe, all that. But other than reading your books, do you offer consultation, lectures, services for businesses? Is there any way the listeners can maybe utilize your services? What do you do as a – are you just a full-time writer? Or tell me a little bit more about what you do at the Kinetic Pen.
Okay, so I'll answer your first question about speaking. I spoke recently to multiple classrooms at Hillside Children's Center, and I have read to other classrooms in various schools and libraries and bookstores. So I definitely do speak in front of people. I've not gone into a business. However, actually, this goes back to what we were talking about how you never know the impact that the book's going to have. Right. There's a woman in Auburn, New York, who happened to be over someone's house who had this book, and the person whose house it was had to take a phone call. And this woman was stuck coming up with some kind of mindfulness plan for inmates at the prison down there. And she picked up this book and she came up with she just got inspired and it helped her. And as a result of what she did there, someone at another correctional facility got into contact with her and said that they want to develop something for the family members of the inmates. And so it's really unbelievable. I can't even wrap my head around kind of the rays of sunshine that are going out that have nothing to do with me. I mean, I say that, but it's really just word of mouth. You know, I'm not involved in that at all. So I guess what I'm saying about that is if I hear of something, I'm always open. Let's put it that way. Cause you just never know what the need is. You know, and I just want to be helpful in whatever way I can. So as far as writing and what I do at my job, I'm a freelance writer and I went freelance in 2005 when my daughter was born. And before that, I was a newspaper reporter at three different newspapers. So I was a beat reporter. So I covered mostly education, I would say, but that was in Maryland, North Carolina, and Rochester at the Democrat and Chronicle. And then when I left and went freelance, so now I write mostly for magazines and newspapers around the country. And I guess my most well-known client would be AARP and Education Week, which is the national newspaper of record for K-12 education in the U.S., and the American School Board Journal. And then I also proofread and edit books. So I always say alumni magazines, but I just say, you know, if it needs to be written, I could probably do it, but I really like proofreading and would like to get more into that actually. And I think we talked earlier about how there's this new niche that I would love to kind of develop, which is to be a proofreader for people with dyslexia, because I have some people who are really close to me who for years I just read over. It doesn't take a long time and I just read it over and help. And I just see the value of first impressions and how somebody's first impression could have nothing, 0% to do with the skill that this person has,
right?
But it could cloud somebody's opinion because of a misplaced comma or a misspelling or something that. So I would love to be of service that way as well.
I love it. I mean, dyslexia, just because you're dyslexic really doesn't mean much. Some of the most powerful, intelligent people have dyslexia, so you can help them properly get the words on the page, proofread it, where I'm the kind of person I probably need your help in that regard, because I haven't talked about this much or if at all really, but part of why I started a podcast was because I wanted to be a writer, but I just like couldn't do it for whatever reason. Like I would write how I spoke, and since I wrote how I spoke, it never really fit on the page. And then in terms of grammatical things, it was never spot on. And I'm like, I kind of threw, and I have questions about this, because I kind of threw away the writing and said, let's just become a podcaster because it's easier. All I have to do is open my mouth, and if I make errors, no one seems to really care. So I'd love to have someone like you in my corner, kind of holding my hand, making sure that the words actually land on the page and work well for a reader. I guess my first question that's coming up on that is, someone like me, basically, and I didn't quit writing entirely, but I write a lot less than I anticipated. Were you ever that person? Have you met people like that? And what should I have done differently? Like, if someone's down and out, they don't think they're a good writer, maybe they're dyslexic, maybe they're struggling to take the things in their head and get them on the page, any like writing exercises or things to kind of get that groove going and get over that hump?
Well, what I can definitely relate to is, every writer can relate to that in a different way, as far as, you know, the blank page, or I don't know if you know of Julia Cameron at all, but she has this sort of 12-step course called The Artist's Way. And one of the things within that is called morning pages. And you're supposed to sit down and write for 20 minutes, longhand, stream of consciousness. And the idea is just to get everything out before your day starts. So my point in all of this is not the actual morning pages, but there would be days when I would sit down and I wouldn't think I'd have anything to write. And I would start off just being really mad about it and saying, I have nothing to write. There's nothing on my mind. And then all of a sudden my bad mood would be coming out onto the page. And then before I realized it, I was writing about why I was in the bad mood. And then all of a sudden I was processing why I was in the bad mood.
Whoa.
And you know what I mean? It's just, I don't think we're blocked. We do get blocked, but there's always a way to the blockage. It's just not always easy. So something that I've had writing clients too, as far as a coaching relationship. And one thing is to, when you sit down, don't think about writing what you want to write. Maybe make a list of the points you want to say. I do this now, actually. Funny enough, I haven't even told anybody this either, but since before COVID, I've not written for myself. I'm an essayist. I'm constantly writing essays, always have. And I just stopped writing about myself a lot, because I've gone through a couple life transitions since COVID started. And I think it's just too overwhelming. But because I have that need to get the information out, but I am, I do feel like there's too much that I don't think I could write it. I use the notes mode on my phone and I just talk. And it turns out that the way it's coming out so fast is actually needs less editing than when I'm sitting down and trying to make something sound good, because I have that internal editor going and it's just like a dump. So that could be another thing, instead of writing, actually just talk. It kind of what you're doing, but instead of it being official in a podcast, if you're still writing for yourself, you're just speaking the words instead of writing them down.
Yeah. I'm thinking I should bring like a phone or a recorder in the shower and just talk to myself, because just doing like a mind dump is something I haven't done in quite some time. One strategy I did way back, and this is kind of a funny story, is I would make the font white and I would turn off all of the spell check stuff. So I would type as quick as possible, but there was no spell check like slowing me down. And since I couldn't read what I wrote, there was no like processing what I just wrote. So instead of, you can do this by writing, but I was doing it by typing and it was working great for me. But then one day I wrote like what felt like 5 pages and none of it actually processed.
Oh, no.
Because I was like watching people walk in the rain and making all these analogies about like the stress and struggle and the moving away from the puddles and like it's not raining that hard and being stressed doesn't make the rain go away. And I did all these observations and none of it saved. So all these things, these are just coming up out of the blue, but that's one writing strategy if done properly could work.
Yeah. Another thing I do is depending on the kind of writing I'm doing, I actually change the color of the font as well, funny enough, and the font, not just the color of the font, but
okay.
The font. It's different moods, really. Different fonts have different moods. So if I want to write something that's fiction, you know, I'll have a different font than if I'm writing something that's deeply personal.
Where did you get your start in writing? Because I look at you as a great success story, because when we're younger, a lot of us want to be writers. We want to be actors. We want to be athletes. We want to be musicians. And then life knocks us down and then we end up going a different route and maybe still treating writing or musicianship or athletics as kind of a passion project on the side. I love that you're a success story of someone who, for example, wrote M is for Mindful just for yourself and your child and kind of as a passion project. And it doesn't always work this way, but it did work. And I think that's a great testament. I'm wondering, like, were you always a writer? Like a lot of people like me quit. Were you always a writer? What kept you, you know, resilient through all this? Tell us a little bit more about like the whole writing journey. When did you start and what happened along the way?
Sure. I have an old school story. So this is going to make me sound really old because I started before the internet. But I wrote my first story when I was 6 or 7 and I still have it in my attic. It's called Santa Claus and the Magic Gifts. And I think I'm one of those people that I can't not write. So, when I was 9, I started playing the piano and I was taught by these two people who raised a concert pianist and they wanted me to go to Juilliard and they were kind of, they were really cheering for me to do that. And I loved the piano and I could have tried out for Juilliard, but I knew I always wanted to be a writer instead. So I said no to that. And I went to a small school that didn't have a journalism program, just a language and literature program. Although Lucille Clifton was a teacher of mine for a semester, which was really nice. Although it's nice in retrospect, I had no idea how lucky I was at the time. Sure. So when I graduated, I moved to Boston and I couldn't find a job anywhere. And I moved back to Baltimore and I was just waitressing. I always knew I had visions. I wanted to work at a magazine. I wanted to work somewhere, but there were no opportunities coming my way. So one night I was looking through the want ads, which also don't exist anymore. And there was an ad for a babysitter and I called and the woman who answered the phone happened to be a copy editor at the Baltimore Sun. And so we ended up talking for more than an hour that night. And I didn't get the job as a babysitter, but so to make this short, cause it's a long story, but she introduced me to a guy named Rafael Alvarez, who was a reporter there and has since worked on The Wire and Homicide for HBO. And we're still good friends. And he introduced me to a woman named Rosalia Maria Scalia, who still lives in Little Italy in Baltimore and was raising 3 kids on a freelancer salary. she introduced me to a woman named Alice Trebanier, who had a free weekly in Baltimore and allowed me to write for free in order to get clips. And then at the same time, I got a job as a copy girl at the Baltimore Sun. That job does not exist anymore because we have computers now that do all the work. But I was like running copy from one with a cart from one floor to another floor.
Oh my.
Yeah, I know. So, so I was working as a copy girl and, were waitressing and writing for free to get clips. Once I had clips, I approached the Baltimore Business Journal with a story idea. They accepted it. I got my first clip and then I got a job as a secretary at a new real estate tabloid that was opening up. Within 6 months, I was acting editor with my own office at that tabloid. And then from there, I got my first reporting job. And then there you go. No, actually, that's not true. That's not true. From there, I got a copy editing job at a newspaper and I hated it because I kept saying, I don't want to make other people's writing better. I want to write. So I would go in on the weekends. I'm such a nerd. So I'd go in on the weekends and the phone would ring and I would answer it, just hoping for something. And one time it was like a deep throat kind of person said the library was throwing away hundreds of books in the dumpster. And I went out with the camera and I crawled up and took pictures and wrote a story. And so that got the editor's attention. And then a second example, there was graffiti to a statue. I covered that on a weekend when one was there as well. And then after those two stories, I ended up getting my reporting position. So it was really just like hunger, really.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't not do it.
Pure grit and resilience and hard work that something like writing or music or any of these, you know, kind of art, they're arts, but they're also sciences. It's easy to start, but it's hard to put in the time and have the hunger and the grit that you did. I'm wondering if you ever wanted to just burn the pages, walk out, and, you know, join the circus or do something entirely different. Like, did you ever quit writing, or have you truly been committed your whole career?
I've never quit writing, although I can say that in the 90s was when we went from, it's when I was working for Gannett, and I was with Gannett for a long time, and you know, Gannett treated me really well, but as a corporation, we went from being writers, you know, reporters to content providers. And then we went from writing stories that just the story drove what the story looked like, you know, the information drove what the story looked like, to this is how many inches you have put, you know, you have to talk with this many people, and then write to this length. It just became, it wasn't as organic and authentic anymore and fun. So I still did large projects and I still had a good time overall. I think the only time when we were just seeing a difference and it just had, you know, there was just some sadness to that, but
Right. Never
stopped writing.
I love this. And I'm going to digress in a moment. We could talk about writing we could just start a whole new podcast on it. It's literally endless and you're a wealth of knowledge. Just ask one more question that I'm curious about. What inspires you after all these years? I find personally, even after 6 months of doing something, sometimes I'll forget about the fact that I'm successful 6 months later because of that habit, because I'm doing the right things. And it's easy to forget about, you know, the little things that got you to where you are. How do you stay sharp? Like, what keeps you inspired and passionate and excited after years and years of writing where it's clearly not boring or mundane for you. Is there a sweet spot from travel to the shower? Where does the inspiration come from? You know,
It's so funny that you just said travel, because a few weeks ago I went to Boston, and on the way I stopped in Lenox, Massachusetts, just to look at the town. I didn't even realize until I was told while I was driving that Edith Wharton was from Lenox and had a house there. Now, I was expecting, so Edith Wharton is a novelist from, like, she wrote in the 1900, 1905, somewhere around there, House of Mirth and some other works. And so I was expecting like a little house with a sign in the front yard, and I was just going to drive by and take a picture. Oh my gosh. It's a tourist attraction, and yeah, it's a mansion, and there are grounds. And I mean, it was this humongous thing. And so I decided that I wasn't going to take a tour, but that by the end of the summer, I was going to read House of Mirth and then go back and then tour the house. And that's what I'm doing. I already have the date in August. I've booked my hotel already. And so, and I'm just about to start the book next week. So I think all of that is to say too, it was surrounded a book that I could read. So I think it's reading other people's work is what inspires me, because and that actually is a problem sometimes, because I can't get lost sometimes in a piece of writing because I'm thinking, ooh, look at how they described that. That's beautiful. And
a little
how could
too
I describe
technical.
What I'm, yeah, I get out of, I, yeah, I get thrown out of it. So it's an occupational hazard.
I could imagine, you know, getting sucked into the technicalities and how can I mimic this or look what they're doing. Is there any books that come to mind that were just so captivating that you couldn't put it down and you kind of got out of that I'm a writer mindset? And just like, is there any writers or books that are coming to mind that really put you in that flow state while you were reading it?
Well, I'm reading a book. I can't even remember the last time I read fiction. It's been a really long time. And I'm reading The Invisible Bridge. And of course, I'm spacing on the author's name.
Sure.
But it's over 900 pages, which is also probably the longest book I've ever read. And it's captivated me from start to finish. And I have, I think, 15 pages to go.
Wow.
Something like that. And I think it's the world building really has me. I don't think I'm so great at world building and maybe that's why I'm lost in it, because it's not something I can identify with. That's probably the secret, is to read something that's also unlike what you do, but there's still a lot that you can learn from and get inspired by.
Yeah. I mean, if you could be an incredible musician and then you see an incredible dancer, it's
right.
A similar skill set, but I can't dance. Like, oh, I love this. Small digression, but not really, because we're all on writing and publications. You wrote the coffee table book on Rochester. What is the book's name again? And let's talk a little bit about it.
Well, that book was a job, and I got paid per chapter. And it's like a chapter on education, a chapter on business, a chapter. And then it was a really long time ago. And I think libraries have it and some offices around town have it. But I feel like it was more of an assignment than something that I approached in the way that I approach everything else.
Personally, what was missing from that experience? Like, what, when you think of Western New York and Rochester and the Finger Lakes and the whole region, maybe the Northeast, I know you like to travel to Boston. Like, what was missing in that book? What are some of the things you love to do when you're not writing and you're just journeying and having fun on the weekend? Any things Robin loves?
Yes. Well, I really love to hike. And I don't do this every month by a long shot, but the first Saturday of every month, a group of people that I know get together to hike around a couple different counties, actually, that are nearby. But in 2008, we all climbed Mount Kilimanjaro together.
Wow.
There were over 40 of us. And so we still get together as much as we can. And, you know, we raised $250,000 for cancer research through that trip. And everybody either had cancer in their past or knew someone who had had cancer. So that's pretty much everybody on the planet. But we've lost a couple people since from cancer, and we just really value our relationships. And my daughter, when we started training, was 1.5. So she would come on the backpack, and that's where she learned dappled sunlight. And, you know, it's just, so we have a long history. Like I said, she's now 15. So we've been hiking together since late 2006.
I love this. I want to move deeper into a rapid fire round just to get to know Robin a little bit better and a little bit about your interests. A previous guest a few episodes back, Kelly Wright, said this is like Family Feud. So I kind of want to call it like the Family Feud rapid fire round, but there's no right answer. There's no most popular answer, just short or sweet, either or fill in the blank questions just to get to know Robin a little bit better.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Here we go.
All right. Early
I wish I had the little push button thing that made a sound.
This is at the end of Family Feud where you don't have to hit the button.
Oh, okay. Oh, got it. Of course. Yeah.
It's like 30 seconds. Yes, let's see how many can get through kind of thing.
Oh, the anxiety.
But if you want to, you know, hit the desk in front of you, that's okay as well. Start off easy. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Beer?
I actually don't drink coffee. So,
fair enough. Why is that?
Number one, I don't like the taste, although I know you can develop a taste, but I never wanted to be addicted to it or rely on it.
I'm the same way. I actually love the taste of coffee, but I drink it so seldomly that I'm like a jittery mess when I drink it and I can't sleep. So, I'm happy that I don't have a taste for coffee because I don't know.
Oh, I'm blabbering where I'm not supposed to talk. I'm supposed to answer these in quick succession. Sorry about that.
I'm not going to call a guest out. I've done it before, but I was asking them like these questions and each answer was like longer than the original conversation. But it's fine. It's shorter and sweeter. Beer, wine, or fill in the blank?
Cocktails first, beer second, wine third.
Okay. Cats or dogs or fill in the blank. Dogs.
Yeah.
Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning.
Favorite ice cream flavor?
Chocolate. You can't get any better than regular chocolate.
Favorite podcast aside from this one?
Oh, that's easy. Armchair Expert.
Favorite book aside from any of your own?
Artist's Way.
And what else? We'll go iOS or Android?
iOS.
And I think that's about it. I guess we'll do favorite season. I ask, so this is silly. I ask a lot of the same questions in rapid fire. So I'm trying to think of new ones. And I'm blanking because you've already answered like most my questions. Literally what I'm going to do, and I recommend all the listeners, go ahead and rewind, re-listen to this podcast and take notes. My goal is to be as present with you as possible. And generally the first time I watch or listen to anything, I try to just be like as engaged as possible. But I really recommend anyone at home, if you are engaged, if this was interesting, listen to it again. I know that Robin had a ton of wisdom on writing and your stories and experience is massive. I mean, for me, it's a testament that you can be creative and passionate, and with work and grit, you can get things done and be successful. So listen to this again, everybody. Share it, subscribe. Let's talk again. What's the best way to keep in touch with you? Social media, website, phone, email. What are the best follow-up steps for us?
So my website is thekineticpen.com. So the, and then kinetic, like the energy, and pen, like you write with, robin@thekineticpen.com. And then my email is robin@thekineticpen.com. Twitter is @thekineticpen.
Perfect. I'm going to follow up. By the time this episode is released, I'm going to have the book. I'll take a selfie with it when we post this one, because I think I'm going to gain a lot of value from it. I'll put the link to M is for Mindful in the show notes as well. And to close out, one final tip to close out with. So let's say I'm young and a brand new writer, or maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm in my 30s, 40s, and 50s, and I've always read books, but I've never wrote. Any tips or words of encouragement for someone who's a total beginner that's just getting their start today?
Sure. I have two. One would be to not call yourself an aspiring writer. So if you're writing, you're a writer. So that's the first thing. And then secondly would be, you hear it's who you know. There's a lot of word of mouth, and my story shows that as well. And you just have to kind of follow the money, so to speak. But the money's not really the money. The money would be, one person will lead you to the next, And Raphael, who was the reporter at the Baltimore Sun that I met a long time ago, he told me when I must have been 22, and I still think of it to this day, is he always says that one story will lead you to another story. So always take a kernel from what you've done or read or somebody you've met, and then just see where you can go from there and create your own crumbs along the path.
That's powerful. Robin, this has been, for me, I'm just like nerding out. I kind of want to chat with you for another 2 hours, but we'll cut it to a close. I'll bring you back. I'm going to read your book. Everyone at home should as well. And thanks, one more time for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to smash stop. Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone. Oh.